Roethlisberger, the quarterback, was all hug it, chug it, football all night.
Hearts are pounding in Denver. Nobody but Terrell here. Davis into the end zone, rocking, standing up. Denver is in the lead. Denver's gonna win it. Oh, baby, they're gonna win this thing.
Probably the final play of the game.
It is caught by Dyson. Can he get in? No, he cannot. And the Rams have won the Super Bowl.
There's one thing I want to say here tonight. It's only four words. This one's for John.
Welcome into Name Change Pending. This is the Week 4 recap, and your host, Brian Preece, here. You find me on Twitter at bpreece24. That's at bpreece24. I'm joined by Tommy Jerone today.
Hey, how's it going? This is Tommy Jerone. You can find me on Twitter at Ruthless Lupe. That's RUTHLESS underscore LUPE.
Tommy on Twitter at Ruthless Lupe. Are you getting tired of that one yet?
I kind of am.
But it's fun, isn't it?
True.
Yeah, I know it is. Get some of the typical stuff out of the way first. So you can find Name Change Pending on Instagram at NameChangePending24 and on Facebook, just search for Name Change Pending. And if you get a chance, we'd love for you to pull up the podcast and rate us on your podcatcher of choice. Give us 5 stars if you can, just so people can find us when they search for awesome podcasts. You know, you type in something amazing, and we want Name Change Pending to come up, don't we, Tommy?
For show.
BT-Dub, Tommy, that's a beautiful little Cubs hat you're wearing there. Where'd you get that?
My travels to Chi-Town many months ago.
Tommy's lying. It's a good-looking Cubs hat from the Fans in Art series at Wrigley Field over the summer. But we're talking football, so let's
foosball.
Foosball. I'm a little sick today. This podcast could go off the rails. I don't feel great. My brain's a little foggy. Hopefully Tommy can carry us home.
I'll do my best.
So let's get started with the London game this year. The London game that was played at 11 o'clock with 10 other games. Thanks a lot, NFL. Raiders and Bears face off. The Raiders took a 17-0 lead in the first half, ended up holding on at the end, 24-21, defeating the Bears. A few notable things from that game. Bears defensive tackle Akeem Hicks, he left the game early. This was before Tommy had showed up to watch the games, but he suffered kind of a gruesome dislocated elbow. That wasn't very much fun to watch. Like I said, the Raiders played well in the first half, leading 17-0, and then had to fight through a furious comeback by the Bears. The Bears took a 21-17 lead, and then the Raiders were able to score another touchdown and get that win. Running back Josh Jacobs looked pretty good, didn't he, Tommy?
Yeah, he looked pretty good. He was running strong. I mean, didn't lose the ball. I mean, basically what you can ask for a running back to do.
Mm-hmm.
He got the job done for the Raiders. I think that's one of the reasons why they were so successful. And he just looked good.
Yeah, he did a good job hitting the hole hard. He was able to break some tackles. 26 carries for 123 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Also can jump over that line for the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah,
just
I remember.
Skyrocketed.
We were watching that, and it really did look like he was shot out of a cannon on that one. That was impressive. Show of athleticism there from Josh Jacobs. Boy, I hope I remember where to do these edits as I fix this podcast tomorrow. So Raiders quarterback Derek Carr, I don't know what to say about him. The Raiders did win. That's 2 wins in a row, I believe, for the Raiders. Yeah, they're 3-2, so 2 wins in a row after they beat the Broncos in Week 1. But Derek Carr doesn't seem to be able to throw the ball past the line of scrimmage hardly at all. He averaged just barely over 7 yards per pass attempt. It was all yards after the catch for Raiders wide receivers yesterday.
Yeah, not good. I'm not a big Carr fan. I'm not a big Raider fan, but even Carr's just, he's never been a good quarterback ever since they drafted him.
He had one good year, earned a big contract.
Okay, fair.
But so, Tommy, yesterday we were watching football, and I posed a hypothetical question to you. So the Red Rocket Andy Dalton to the Bears for a 4th-round pick. Did you have a chance to think about that? Who says no on that deal?
I don't think the Bears do. Bears need a quarterback, unless, you know, you want to gamble with Chase Daniels. And
oh, man. He looked rough yesterday.
I mean, as opposed to Trubisky, who looks rough every week.
That's the thing. It, like, I compare the two quarterbacks, and I feel like Chase Daniel is they're both equally bad as quarterbacks, except for Trubisky seems to make those two or three decisions a game that will lose the game for you, and Chase Daniel at least keeps you in the game. I don't know.
Are either worse than Rex Grossman?
Oh, Rex Grossman made it to the Super Bowl.
I mean.
But, hey, at least London got a good game. So that's a good game for them. We'll move on next to the Ravens and Steelers. Ravens beat the Steelers 26-23 in overtime. Really good game. There were a couple of moments from this game that stood out to me. Mason Rudolph. He took a hit from Ravens safety Earl Thomas II. Right under the chin. It honestly didn't look like a dirty hit. Didn't look intentional to me at all. But he was out on his feet the moment he got hit. And then, I don't know if you saw this, Tommy. I didn't see it. I just read about it this morning. But they brought the cart out for Mason Rudolph. And the reason why he ended up walking off the field is because they couldn't get the cart to work to take him off the field. So they, you know, guy with a potential neck injury, they've got teammates lifting him up off the turf. He's not on a back brace or anything. He doesn't have his head stabilized. And you watched him walk off the field. I mean, he wasn't present.
No, he wasn't. You could see him mouthing, "Oh, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm good." Oh. And then it also looked like he was saying, "Who are you?" Where am I? Yeah, he's walking off the field with no face mask because they cut it off.
I mean, honestly.
I mean, it's not funny, but just the fact that you couldn't get the cart working. Guy just suffered probably one of the worst concussions ever.
It looked bad.
And I mean, for a second, his body was lifeless. It was just laying there.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked bad. And then the reactions on the field weren't any better. You had Juju just looking like he saw a dead body.
Juju was terrified. Juju's like crawling around on the ground trying to get to him, and teammates were having to pull him back. All I could think of watching that scene unfold was, geez Louise, the optics on this. Like you said, Tommy, it's not funny, but we're going to talk about roughing the passer penalties later, and there are situations like this where, yeah, even if it wasn't an intentional play by Earl Thomas, that's roughing the passer. Some of the other calls that we've seen this weekend, we'll get into that later.
Now you have Delvin Hodges, who's the now starting Steelers quarterback.
Out of Samford University. I give you $10, you tell me where Samford is right now without the Google machine.
Isn't it right next to Stanford?
I don't
They both end in Ferd.
They do both end in Ferd. I mean, by that logic, it could be in Detroit, if ending in Ford.
True.
Okay, see, you got to think about these things, Tommy. With that, Tommy, your Chargers face the Steelers next. Devlin Hodges at quarterback finished the game. It's going to be interesting to see what the Steelers do. Hodges is their third string quarterback. If Mason Rudolph isn't healthy, do you think they go out and sign someone, or do they throw Devlin Hodges into the mix?
I think you have to sign someone. You can't.
At least have a backup.
Yeah, to have a backup, but like you said, the optics on that. Just Jeez the hit Louise. and his body was just lifeless.
It was bad.
Like, you can't expect him after 1 week to just pop right back up.
Yeah.
Like, the lights were out home for a while.
For Mason Rudolph's sake, I think we both can agree on this. I hope he sits out several weeks. Because 7 days is not enough time for your brain to recover from that type of a hit. Because it was the hit, Earl Thomas, and his head hit the ground. It was bad. But we can move on from that. Ravens quarterback in the win. Ravens quarterback, 161 yards and 3 interceptions from Lamar Jackson. So he had a very hot start to the season. Maybe he's coming back to earth a little bit. Not really sure. He ran the ball a lot more. I think he had... If I pull up the numbers here.
Well, we were talking about this the first couple weeks. Like, he didn't really play any tough teams his first go around. Like, he played the Dolphins. Who else did he play?
Yeah, he started the season against the Dolphins.
So of course you're obviously gonna look good against the Dolphins. Everyone has, except the Chargers, I think. And
you're so negative on the Chargers.
But obviously that wasn't a tough. I mean, anyone who plays the Dolphins hopefully wins. They're trying to tank for Tua. It's pissing off the whole team.
Arizona was who they faced in week 2.
Okay. Arizona, enough said.
Right.
So we kind of expected this. Me and Brian and I, grammar. Brian and I both.
We're working on it.
Yeah, we're working on it. It's a work in progress. that's the name of my new podcast. Find me on Twitter. No, I'm kidding. No, but me and Brian talked about this the first couple weeks when everyone was talking about Lamar Jackson being an MVP candidate. And I said he has to play tougher teams, a defense worthy of, like, really testing him. I guess you kind of saw that in Kansas City. Now you saw that in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's defense, not a lot of stars, I feel, but they're tough.
I mean, they're well coached.
Oh, well coached.
Say what you will
sure.
about Mike Tomlin, but that defense is well coached. Devin Bush at linebackers looked really good. So yeah, I think you hit it right on the head, Tommy. When he's facing tougher opponents, we get to see what Lamar Jackson really is. And that's not to say that maybe he just had a bad day, 161 yards, 3 interceptions. But the fact is, Ravens still win the game. So in the end, when they look back on this game, they beat a rival on the road. So, we'll continue to see. For me, the jury is still out on Lamar Jackson. But just to end this one, the Ravens now lead the AFC North with a 3-2 record, waiting for the Browns to play the 49ers tonight. If the Browns win, then they'll be tied at the top of the AFC North with the Ravens. So Tommy mentioned the Cardinals a little bit, how they had played the Ravens earlier in the year. Cardinals went into Cincinnati and beat the Bengals 26-23. This was a battle of winless teams. I'm kind of surprised we're talking about it, but if you watched the first 55 minutes of this game, it probably never would have made it on this podcast. But the last 5 minutes, the Bengals came alive. Andy Dalton was able to tie the game up with a 42-yard touchdown pass to Tyler Boyd with 2 minutes left in the game. And then Kyler Murray came out, rookie quarterback, on consecutive plays in the last drive of the game. He had a 24-yard pass to David Johnson, and then he had a 24-yard run that helped set up a game-winning field goal as time expired. So an effective 2-minute drill in a tie game on the road. What more can you ask from Kyler Murray, Tommy?
Nothing.
Tommy doesn't like Kyler Murray. Tommy doesn't like small quarterbacks.
No, I don't like the hype. It's not anything to do with him. He's a phenomenal athlete. I'll give him that. He got drafted in the MLB, drafted in the NFL. But the hype around him, I mean, I feel like he's still not living up to the hype. He's tiny. Whoever says he's 5'10", get out of town. He must be wearing his cleats because he's not 5'10".
We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the Packers-Cowboys game, Broncos-Chargers, Panthers-Jaguars, and finish it up with the Sunday night game, Colts against the Chiefs. And then we're going to talk about penalties a little bit as well. So stay tuned to Name Change Pending.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Name Change Pending. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search for Name Change Pending and subscribe to get the newest episodes of the podcast and to check out photos of hosts Josh Keel, Tommy Girone, and Brian Priest as we travel the continent to do what we love, watch sports. Also, I know you've got a lot going on today, but if you could take 2 minutes out of your busy schedule to give the podcast a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice, we would greatly appreciate it. Those algorithms can be tricky, and all I know is that 5-star ratings jump us up the lists. So thanks for tuning in, and now back to the show.
All right, welcome back. This is your host, Brian Priest. I'm joined today by Tommy Girone. Bow, 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 bow.
I'm going to change that name.
He's not going to change it, folks. Don't worry. I don't want anybody to be panicked. So Packers-Cowboys game, the Packers looked like they were going to blow the Cowboys out, and all things considered, they probably should have won by more than 10. Packers come out on top 34-24, deep in the heart of Texas.
Yeah.
Isn't that a song?
Yeah. I was trying to think of the words, but I couldn't.
We don't know country music. The story of this game is Packers running back Aaron Jones. It doesn't really help Tommy's fantasy team when he started Aaron Rodgers, but Jones had the game of his life, 19 carries, 107 yards, 4 touchdowns. Every time we looked up, the Packers were in the red zone. They would attempt one pass and then hand it off to Aaron Jones for 6.
Go ahead.
Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott had the opposite of the Aaron Jones game of his life, had 3 interceptions. The second time in his career, he had 3 picks, and there were 2 other turnovers called back due to Packer penalties. At one point, I believe the Cowboys turned the ball over on three consecutive plays, and two of them were overturned. And it got rough for the Cowboys. Late in the game, they mounted a furious comeback. Wide receivers Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup combined for 339 yards receiving and two touchdowns. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, besides those two receivers, Dak threw a lot more passes to the Packers than he did his own team.
Yeah, he kind of did. I feel like watching this Cowboys offense, they've been, the last couple weeks, they've really just gotten away from what was working for them the first 3 weeks of the year, and they're throwing the ball too much, if I am completely honest with it, and I think that's hurting them. We'll jump next into the Broncos' 20-13 victory over the Los Angeles Chargers. Broncos get their first win of the year. I already did a 20-minute show this morning on this game, talking primarily about the Broncos. So, Tommy, tell us about this game from your perspective.
What can I say about the Los Angeles Chargers that I haven't already yelled?
We didn't have a mic on you yesterday, true. Tommy. Say it again.
So,
but keep it cleaner than yesterday.
Fair. So, injuries, of course, number one. You see a lot of key players. One in particular, Melvin Ingram, on the sideline, hurt. Really hurt our pass rush, in a sense. I mean, Bosa did as best he could, and even with our backups, we still couldn't get to Flacco like we wanted to. I mean,
the offensive line of the Broncos sure tried to help you with that, though.
Yeah, they did. I mean, we got to him one or two times. I don't remember. The other thing I'm disappointed in is Melvin Gordon. Now, I feel like we relied on Melvin a little bit too much in our game. And so three sacks, you said?
Yeah.
So we got to him three times, three sacks. But like I was saying, Melvin Gordon, disappointment. And I expected this, especially because, you know, Melvin is a star on the offense, but we really didn't. We haven't needed him. So why do we alter our game plan around him? Eckler rarely got the ball. I mean, unless you saw it differently. When he did get the ball, he did something with it. And then several mistakes in the offense happened when Melvin Gordon was in the offense. He hasn't developed a rhythm, for one with Phil, for one with the line. He missed all of training camp. And so I'm wondering why we dedicated so many touches to him when, for one, Eckler has been really our focus this whole season.
So on that point, Tommy, really quick with some of the numbers, Eckler only had 3 carries for 7 yards, which I agree isn't enough, but he did have 15 catches for 86 yards on 16 targets. So, I mean, they used him a lot in the passing game, but I would agree with you. I think that Melvin Gordon got a lion's share of those carries due to name value rather than deserving it.
Yeah. Well, not even deserving it, but earning it. He missed all of training camp. Like, Eckler's been there throughout. Eckler isn't even getting paid what Melvin's getting paid. And he's being more productive. He's actually playing the game of football.
I test Eckler's a better back right now.
Because he has a rhythm.
Yeah.
Two, he's been practicing with this team since training camp, so obviously he knows how big the holes are going to be. He just there's a rhythm there, and you can see it in the first 4 weeks of play.
Yeah, definitely.
And now week 5, we get Melvin back finally. He's active, and he's going to get touches, and we just throw all that. I felt like we threw all that out the window.
I was happy to see that Melvin Gordon was going to be playing and taking carries from Austin Eckler, because I felt like that was going to be beneficial to the Broncos, and it speaks to exactly what you're saying, that it was a bad move by Anthony Lynn.
Yeah, and it was. And then on top of that, even when we were passing the ball, Rivers wasn't passing the ball well.
Bad day.
2 interceptions, 0 touchdowns. I mean, there were some passes where there was no one there. I don't know if it's a miscommunication, but I mean, and I've said this, and I'm going to keep saying this, I think this is Phillips' last decent year.
I mean, 211 yards on 48 passing attempts. Is it going to be a decent year, or was this an aberration?
This is
one game.
This is one game.
Okay.
I think he's gonna you know, dust himself off, go back to the room, hopefully get in a rhythm with Melvin.
He's
hopefully
old enough. He's pretty dusty.
Okay, fair enough. But you know what I mean. Dust the dirt off his shoulder pads from being on the ground so much.
Broncos didn't have a single sack yesterday. They were in the backfield a lot.
No, I mean, fair. Another thing that killed us, Austin Eckler again fumbles on the 1 yard line trying to get a touchdown.
Let line stand.
I mean, granted, it was going into halftime, so there was no point to really be that concerned, but it's still, come on, man, you got to hold on to that ball. It's not a loaf of bread. You got to hold on to it.
Yeah, anything that takes points off the board, especially when you're trailing 17 to nothing going into halftime, even a field goal right there really could have changed things. And the way the game turned out, a field goal could have been huge. So great play by Kareem Jackson to make that tackle. If you notice on the replay from the back end behind the end zone, Kareem Jackson actually took a bad route when Eckler was still in the pocket, in the box. But as he went to the outside, Kareem Jackson was just able to close on that and punch the ball out right at the sideline. So good play on my end.
Yeah. Another positive. I'll go positive. I'm going to end on the positive. I'm going to go one more negative.
Okay.
We finally sign a place kicker. We stopped giving Ty Long chances to kick field goals. I mean, finally. But when we do, Mr. Chase McLaughlin?
McLaughlin? I don't know. Sarah McLaughlin?
But Mr.
Chester McLaughlin?
Mr. Chase, first kick, don't know what happened. 48-yard kick, doesn't even make it. Doesn't even have the distance on it. Short, was gonna miss even if he did have the distance.
Oh yeah,
and Brian saw it too. It was a weird looking kick.
I thought this was interesting because if you pay attention to the ref underneath the left goalpost where the kick ended up, well, I guess right as you're facing the goalpost, the ref had to do like a little matrix move to get out of the way of the football and then signal that it was a missed kick. It was fun. I enjoyed it. Tommy's shaking his head. I don't think he enjoyed it quite as much.
And then luckily he redeemed himself, you know, kicked two more, finally.
In a losing effort, right?
In a losing effort, but he still kicked two, one at 45 yards out. So, I mean, hopefully Chase McLaughlin has a better day next week. Hopefully we keep him going, or hopefully Badgley's back. I don't know. But the only positive that I'm taking away from this game for the Chargers was Desmond King's punt return touchdown. Our only touchdown that we scored. But it was a heck of a punt return. There was a flag on the play, but we were watching. It was like, where's the flag? Even the commentators like, where's the flag? Where's the flag? It was a clean play.
I watched the replay today. You could argue there was a block in the back initial. Even as a Broncos fan, It would have been a cheap call. Broncos special teams failed on that play, but come out on top with the dub. And if you're going to go into a tough place like a soccer stadium to play football.
Fair enough. Touché.
Tommy, did you happen to see, last thing on this game before we move on, but did you happen to see there were a couple articles today? Vic Fangio said it. Philip Lindsay said it. Talking about how it almost felt like a home game for the Broncos because there was so much orange and the fans were so loud.
Like I said in our preview show for the whole NFL season, the Chargers will have the best road record of any team in the NFL this year, strictly because they have no home stadium. And it's going to be the same way when they get their new stadium.
I love it. Okay, so we're going to jump into the Panthers-Jaguars game, and this really is going to be all about Christian McCaffrey. I'm going to go to my last note first. Gardner Minshew continues to look pretty good. 374 yards, two touchdowns in the loss. He did lose three fumbles in the game, so that's ball security is something he's going to need to work on in that pocket awareness. But otherwise, he's good, man. He really might be the answer in Jacksonville.
I mean, a couple of those fumbles where like he was getting ready to throw them, and they just hit him out of his hand, like the defensive line did. So, I mean, a lot of it is just pocket awareness. I mean, he already has great pocket awareness, so I think
We saw that last week.
Yeah.
Against Denver.
Yeah, so I think he just needs to continue on the pocket awareness, be mindful.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens. But let's dive into the record-setting pace that Christian McCaffrey is on right now. I'm just going to throw some stats out there, Tommy, and I'm kind of blown away as I was looking at all these numbers. So, one, Christian McCaffrey is on pace to break the all-time yards from scrimmage record set by Chris Johnson 10 years ago. Right now, he's averaging 161 yards from scrimmage per game and leads the league with 587 yards rushing. I mean, think about that. 161 yards from scrimmage per game. That's like...
dual purpose.
That's incredible. He joined Jim Brown as the only other running back with at least 175 scrimmage yards in four of his team's first five games. The NFL record for that stat is six games in 1 year. And he's already got four through 5 weeks. Jeez. And then yesterday he scored three touchdowns, I believe it was. I forgot to put the number in here. I'm almost certain it was three, though. He has six rushing touchdowns in the year, seven total touchdowns through five games. So, I mean, in short, if Christian McCaffrey's on your fantasy team or if you're a Panthers fan, things are going all right for you. I'm, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Christian McCaffrey once Cam Newton is healthy again and comes back and playing quarterback for the Panthers. If he does, will that change the productivity of Christian McCaffrey? But he's putting up numbers that just frankly haven't been seen before in NFL history, and not exactly what I would have expected when he came out of Stanford 3 years ago.
Hey man, the guy's working hard. I'm not gonna call him a kid. He's a grown man, but he's working hard.
He is,
and you know you got to tip your hat to that, even if you're not a Panthers fan.
You know, as a Broncos fan, I respect Christian McCaffrey because his dad, Easy Ed McCaffrey, was one of my favorite Broncos growing up as a wide receiver with the Broncos, won a couple Super Bowls with the team. So I've always kind of had a soft spot for Christian McCaffrey. Would have preferred if he ended up in Denver, but you win some, you lose some. And we'll touch on the night game before we take our last break of the show. The Colts came out, surprisingly beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Tommy, most of this recap is going to be up to you because I'm an old man and I work at 5 a.m. and I fell asleep. I know that Pat Mahomes aggravated a left ankle injury that he suffered in week one. He aggravated it, looked like, a couple times. And overall, he struggled in this loss to the Colts. And then I just want to mention Byron Pringle again because I love the chips. The can that those chips come in, it's ingenious. The way it's designed, and then you can use it for tennis balls. You can use it for a number of things. If you get drunk, you can use it to create swords and things like that. Like, Pringles offer a lot of versatility, and it looked like Byron Pringle offers a lot of versatility for this Kansas City Chiefs offense. What else did you see in the game, Tommy?
Well, I saw a defensive line that had a decent pass rush. I saw an offensive line on the Colts that's just beast. Damian Williams came back. Damian didn't look like he was a little bit hesitant with his knees, because when you have knee pain, that's just a thing. I mean, Patrick Mahomes was trying to create as much time as he could with his feet. I mean, he did a few times, and it was, you know, it was working out. He was finding the open guy. There's a few times where he couldn't. The Colts offense or defensive line was just a little bit too much. But the key thing with the Colts on winning this game was just their rushing attack. I mean, Marlon Mack had 29 carries, 132 yards, no scores. I mean, Jacoby Brissett had the one score when he ran it in from about 5 yards, 10 yards, I don't know, within the 10-yard line, ran it in, was the only score for the Colts, I believe. But, I mean, so the Colts really definitely relied on that rushing attack. And why wouldn't you? You have two of the best left-sided linemen in the league, and Quentin Nelson and
Anthony Costanzo.
Oh, Anthony Costanzo. I mean, commentary couldn't stop raving about that left side of the line for the Colts, and rightfully so. Like,
you can't blame them.
I mean, Quentin Nelson is just an animal. I wouldn't want to be lined up in his gap or at all, like, because he'll get you.
And they showed a video during the game of Quentin Nelson warming up and stretching before the game.
He's getting low and wide.
340-pound manimal? That boy is flexible. pretty incredible what he can do. I've liked him since the athlete. Day they drafted him.
An athlete.
And yeah, but to your point, Tommy, it looks like there was one touchdown apiece for each offense. Jacoby Brissett's rushing touchdown and Pat Mahomes threw a touchdown pass to who?
Byron Pringle. Byron.
They popped him. You can't stop him. 6 receptions, 103 yards. Byron Pringle.
Yeah, and I mean, the Colts were able to get to the quarterback, had 4 sacks this game, really putting the pressure on Mahomes, aggravating Mahomes' ankle. There's a few times he took hits. The defensive linemen were just, you know, bull rushing, you know, the guards straight back into Mahomes and just, you know, incidental contact when you're getting rushed back, and they just stepped on Mahomes and caused him to roll his ankle.
You know, from what I've seen, the little bit that I've seen of the Chiefs this year, they're an incredible offensive unit. But if I was a Chiefs fan, I'd be worried about 2 things. That offensive line play and the defense. The acquisition of Frank Clark from the Seahawks, giving him that big contract, hasn't paid dividends this year. Tyrann Mathieu has been really good on the back end of the defense, not filling in, but taking over the role that Eric Berry used to play as a quarterback of that defense. But they're not good in either unit, and that could be their undoing when you get into January football and, you know, you face a complete team like the Patriots. It's going to be tough sledding for the Chiefs. I'm not saying they can't figure some things out. It's still early in the year. They got 3 months left before the playoffs, but they need to figure something out on defense and that offensive line. They need to keep Pat Mahomes healthy. If he has to run around and in a circle for 15, 20 yards on every play, a la Russell Wilson earlier in his career, it's going to be tough.
So do you have a list of complete teams that you think that the Chiefs might be the Chiefs' kryptonite?
The Patriots?
Okay, one. That's what I mean. That you just think the Patriots? There's not another team out there that you think?
I don't think another team can score enough with the Chiefs to beat them consistently. Like, any given day, you know, it's the NFL, so any team could win. But you get into the playoffs, there's really the Patriots and...
Especially with their defensive struggles. So a team like Houston, who scored 53 this week.
No, Houston sucks. I really liked Houston, but their offensive line has been bad. Deshaun Watson's great, but I don't see Houston being successful with what they're doing on their offensive line. So that's just my personal opinion. Like I said, anybody could beat anybody on any given day, but the Chiefs are going to have home field advantage throughout the playoffs, save for facing the Patriots, more than likely. They should be able to beat pretty much anybody in Kansas City.
So do you think strong defensive teams, maybe not the best offensive teams, but strong defensive teams will give the Chiefs fits?
I do. I think defensive teams are going to cause the Chiefs to struggle. You saw the Lions. Was that last week when they played the Lions or 2 weeks ago? The Lions played them really well, and the Chiefs still ended up scoring, I think, 31 points in that game. And that was one of the better defensive efforts. Yesterday, I think the 13 points for the Chiefs, a lot of it can be attributed to Pat Mahomes' ankle injury acting up, and he didn't have the mobility that he normally does. Because that's really what it comes down to with Pat Mahomes, is when he's mobile and can move around and move the pocket and create extra time for his wide receivers, he's got video game wide receivers all over the field, from Byron Pringle to Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill when he's healthy. Got a bunch of guys who can create if you give them time. But if Pat Mahomes can't give them time by scrambling and the offensive line can't give Mahomes time, then it's more of a struggle, but the offense still has such a quick strike ability that you have to have, I believe, to beat the Chiefs in the playoffs, you have to have a strong defensive effort, and you have to have an offense that can put 30 points on the board when they need to. And there's not a lot of teams that can do both of those things. The Eagles, maybe, if the Chiefs were to make it to the Super Bowl. The Patriots, of course. The Josh Rosen-led Dolphins, maybe.
Well, what about the Packers? What do you think about the Packers?
Jerry is still out for me on the Packers as well, because Aaron Rodgers hasn't looked like Aaron Rodgers in that Matt LaFleur offense. Aaron Jones has looked really good, and I think Aaron Rodgers will look good, but he hasn't yet. So time will tell on that one, but the Packers are one of my favorites in the NFC.
So do you think, real quick, before we move on, last question. Sorry, don't mean to hold up too much time.
I love it.
How deep do you think this ankle injury is going to go for Mahomes? Like, he was spatted, and he still rolled his ankle. So obviously, like, at that point, and you're limping after being spatted, ankle's the size of a grapefruit right now.
You know, it depends. I haven't seen a report on what exactly the ankle injury is. Is it your standard, like, low foot ankle sprain that you can deal with? Is it one of those dreaded high ankle sprains? Is there ligament damage? I mean, in the end, with the way that Pat Mahomes plays, I think that this is an injury that's going to linger throughout the season. It's just a matter of how much it will limit him. But he's going to deal with it all year. I mean, you've had ankle injuries and you can play ball on them. It doesn't get better if you keep playing.
I mean, not to jump sports, but like ankle injuries. Think of ankle injuries. I think, Steph Curry, great player, horrible ankles. And then if he hurts his ankle, it's with him the whole season.
Yep.
And I mean, with the style of play that Mahomes does, I mean, he gets more ankle sprains, bad ankles. It's just going to be with him his whole career.
It would be one thing if Pat Mahomes played primarily was a pocket passer a la Tom Brady, or like a Joe Flacco is a good example of a guy who just stays in the pocket. If he played that way, the ankle injury wouldn't be as big of a deal. Mm-hmm. But with the way he scrambles to create, and that's a huge part of his success, it's a problem.
Oh, yeah. Big problem.
So we're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll finish up talking about some of the questionable penalties we've seen so far in the NFL this year.
We appreciate you joining us on Name Change Pending today. Make sure and jump on Twitter. Follow your hosts, Brian Priest, at BPriest24, Tommy Girone, at Ruthless_Lupe, and Josh Keel, at Rise and Shout. Also, we know that you're busy, but if you could take 2 minutes out of your day and give us a 5-star rating on your podcatcher of choice, that would be so amazing. Help us move up those algorithms. I don't totally understand how they work, but I know with some 5-star ratings, the podcast shows up higher on the lists. And we want to help other people find the show, don't we? Doesn't really matter what you say for us. Maybe suggest some new verses for Ruthless Lupe. But thanks again for joining us, and stay tuned for more episodes of Name Change Pending.
Welcome back to Name Change Pending. This will be our last segment today. Let's talk about some of the penalties we've seen in the league, Tommy. The two that really stand out to me, roughing the passer and pass interference. As far as pass interference calls go, they are allowing replay on pass interference, both offensive and defensive pass interference. But it really hasn't mattered. You know, it seems like the PI calls, those roughing the passer calls, have been so inconsistent that, at least for me watching the game as just a fan, whether the Broncos are involved or not, it takes away a lot of the fun of watching the NFL, because I'm always, every time there's a big play, my first instinct is to look at the graphics to see if that yellow flag graphic has come up every single time.
And I think even the people who do the TV spots, like, they're waiting to see if there's a flag so then they can put up that yellow sign. It's ridiculous, honestly. You see a big run, or you see, you know, a big pass play where someone has so much time in the pocket, it's like, oh, someone must be holding.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, how is that hole that big? Someone's holding.
Mm-hmm.
And it, more likely or not, when you have, and watching the Chargers, this is just watching the Chargers, like, that's what happens. A big play happens and someone on the offensive line's holding, or someone got a block in the back. And even the slightest block, you put your hand on someone's back and they fall? Block in the back.
See, for me, the holding calls, like,
there's holding on every play.
Yeah, that's something that happens. Like, so be it. For me, it's those judgment calls, like roughing the passer, where it's clear to me that nobody knows what roughing the passer is. Nobody knows what pass interference actually is, whether it be fans, players, coaches. Even the officials don't seem to know. From game to game, one call is called pass interference, and then a worse play with more contact, it goes uncalled. And I just don't get it. And it's some examples that we've seen, and not to sound like sour grapes, but these obviously stand out in my head. I'm not blaming the refs for losses, but in two of the Broncos' losses to the Bears and Jaguars, the Bears and Jaguars' final drives were heavily impacted by roughing the passer penalties, one on Bradley Chubb and one on Von Miller. And as I looked at those, I didn't see it. I don't know. I just didn't see the roughing the passer. The NFL is a league where you hit people.
Not anymore.
Talk about Clay Matthews. I mean, going back to last season with the Packers and now this season with the Rams. Clay Matthews, it seems like, gets flagged for roughing the passer more than anybody in the league.
Clay, stop touching the quarterback. Drop back in coverage. You're costing the team too many yards, bud.
Well, I think what's happening with Clay Matthews is he's a long-haired hippie freak, and the refs just don't like it.
I think he cut his hair this year, didn't he?
I don't think he cut his hair. I don't know. I haven't watched many Rams games. But he gets flagged consistently for those. Yesterday, we were watching the Cowboys-Packers game.
A little tap on the helmet will get you a flag.
It was a brush by of his helmet, and he got a 15-yard penalty for it. It was ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
It wasn't forceful. At most, that was going to brush Dak's hair back to get the hair out of his eyes. Lamar Jackson, I saw a replay of a penalty from the Ravens-Steelers game yesterday. Jackson got wrapped up around the waist and taken to the ground. And that was called a roughing the passer. Like, it's ridiculous what we're seeing. And really what it comes down to for me, it's just not fun to watch. I understand wanting to protect the QB because the offense is what brings the fans in a lot of cases, but this has gone overboard. Is that a controversial opinion? Yeah, I guess it could be. If you're family or friend of Mason Rudolph today, it's controversial for me to say protecting the quarterback has gone overboard. But what happened to Mason Rudolph was roughing the passer in any year of football that I've watched in my life.
So with the roughing the passer, when tackling a passer who is defenseless in a defenseless posture, a defensive player must not unnecessarily or violently throw him down or land on top of him with all or most of the defender's weight.
Okay.
So then you go back and you look at some of these. Okay, so the Dak Prescott one where he gets brushed against the helmet.
A joke.
Okay, go back to the manual. Go back to the rule book. Read the book. Put on get the white hat off and go back to school. What's another? The one where the Steelers tackle Lamar Jackson by the waist. Didn't throw him down. Just gravity. Physics are a thing. I learned that today on the golfing course. Physics are...
Nice. On the golfing course.
Yeah, the golf course. Sorry, my bad. Again, a work in progress. My new podcast every Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Are we just worried? I don't know. But these calls are ridiculous. Like, you know when someone has ill intentions. Some of it's incidental context. If you got to call it. Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, these little ones where you're getting brushed up against the helmet or... You know, you're tackling someone, and it's form tackling, but it's roughing the passer. You're not driving them into the ground.
Yeah.
And you're getting these roughing the passer calls. I mean, go back to the rule book and maybe watch some old school sacks, and then maybe you can call roughing the passer on some of those. Go back to, like, when you were able to hit someone in the NFL, and then you'll find a few roughing the passer calls that weren't called. Now, the ones that are getting called today are ridiculous.
I mean, just... Use common sense when looking at it. The Von Miller roughing the passer play against the Jaguars last week. Minshew had just barely released the ball, and Miller pushed him in the chest. Got roughing the passer. It's kind of a joke. I compare it to the last few years where nobody knew what a catch was. You never knew if, you know, did he... complete the process. Did he take two steps? Going to the ground? Did the ball move? Like, a catch is a catch. We've all played catch growing up. We know whether I caught the ball or not.
Weren't the referees on strike or something, and that's when we had replacement referees?
Yeah.
Okay, and that was because they wanted to get paid more money?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You want to get paid more money, then make the right calls.
I don't expect the refs to be perfect.
No, but I'm
some
not.
Some of these but judgment
use your,
calls are
use your head.
Yeah.
Common sense.
I totally agree.
And when something's hot, you don't touch it. When you throw someone down and you land on them and you crush them, that's roughing the passer. Call it.
It's frustrating. I don't think we need to keep beating a dead horse on this one, Tommy.
But we're going to. You want to know why? Because come next Sunday, there's going to be
gonna
more of
these. Again.
It's going to happen again.
No doubt
People
about it.
People are going to be frustrated.
The No Fun League. Today's NFL. But that's going to do it for a Week 5 recap with Brian Priest and Tommy Girone.